Hello, Sangha News listeners. This is Baba Golia, IMS's Executive Director, and I'm here with Gina Sharp and Larry Yang, two teachers from our annual People of Color retreat. Gina is one of the founders of New York Insight, and Larry is a core teacher at East Bay Meditation Center in California. Both are passionate about and deeply committed to ensuring that diverse communities have access to the Buddhist teachings of liberation. It's in the context of Buddhism's emergence and development in the West that I wanted to ask them some questions about community of color and the practice. So Gina and Larry, welcome. It's a pleasure to be here with both of you. And if I may, Larry, let me start with you. Can you describe how retreats for people of color have impacted the broader Insight meditation community?
It's a really interesting and important question, because these retreats have been going on in some way, shape, or form within the Insight community for over 10 years, maybe as much as 15 years, depending upon the location. And over time, what we have found is that in the safety of the retreat container, in the safety of the practice, diverse communities and communities of color have been able to access the teachings in a way that they have not been able to access in sort of the more mainstream retreats. And as they deepen practice, they feel they are able to bring that level of safety and understanding of the Dharma such that they can enter the mainstream retreats. And so we have found that these retreats are a door into not just personal practice, but our collective emergence as a whole community, so to speak, and which is really the intentions of these identity retreats to start with. And one of the other aspects of this deepening is being reflected in the current Dharma Leaders training program, in which out of 105 people who are accepted, there will be 42 people of color. And that is a tremendous deepening of a whole diverse community's practice so that they're rising to leadership as well.
I certainly agree with everything that Larry said about what the impact is. I think also that it's an incremental impact, that we're just now beginning to see the impact on the broader community. Because in the beginning, the community of color had to form and practice together in order to feel at home in the teachings. And so that's now beginning to happen. And I think it's been amazing at IMS how the staff has been impacted. And you probably know better than I do how this place has been impacted by the simple gesture of having these retreats for people of color, that slowly over time, communities are starting to come together. So that alone is an amazing development. That means that IMS and other centers like IMS will begin to not be so monocultural, and it will have the advantage of diverse viewpoints, of diverse ways of practice, of just mirroring the larger culture that we're in. And so for me, it's been a real pleasure to see how the impact of these retreats are happening slowly over time, because I think if it happens slowly over time, the impact is deeper and more lasting. So I'm really quite pleased at how deliberate the impact, the effect has been. And I think that what will happen even more over time is that people will begin to get much more comfortable coming to mainstream retreats. So the mainstream retreats will eventually also be impacted.
So if I may, I'm going to move on to the next question. Gina, I'll start with you and ask how you envision the future of people of color retreats.
Well, by that question, I'm taking it to mean the question that I'm asked a lot, which is, will eventually these retreats just get, integrated into mainstream retreats? And as a matter of fact, Larry and I and a couple of the other teachers were of this retreat were talking about how sweet it is. And just like women's retreats or other identity retreats, they serve a purpose. First, they serve the purpose of inviting people in who have not been here before to come into an environment that feels safe, at least at the outset. And so I'm hoping that over time, the retreats will just continue and grow and deepen. And as a matter of fact, I was in group interviews today, and as I looked at people's interview sheets, some people had been all 7 years of retreats, and other people had been for 3 years in a row, and other people had been for 5 years in a row. And there's a real sense of ownership of the retreat, and again, of it being home. And so hopefully we will just like many of the other retreats at IMS, it will just continue to be a retreat that stays on the calendar.
The only thing that I would add is that these retreats will always be entry points for new practitioners into the Dharma. But even more explicitly in the future, I feel, and this is also a template that can be brought to other retreats, is that we will begin to, as the community comes together and is a felt living experience as opposed to an understood experience, that this aspect of the refuge of Sangha and community is going to be more further developed and refined as a teaching that can be offered back to the larger insight community as to how do we build communities in what might feel contradictorily to be in the silence. What aspects of the silence actually promote kindness and connection and interdependence that we can actually bring into our lived lives? And this aspect of community building is not so emphasized elsewhere, but we definitely feel it in these POC retreats. And as we begin to highlight that in the future, I think it's one of the contributions that these retreats can offer to the larger community in the future.
So how do each of you make the Buddhist teachings on freedom from suffering relevant to diverse communities?
When Joseph and I started these retreats at IMS, he turned to me and said, well, how do you want to teach these retreats? I was puzzled. I said, what do you mean? It never occurred to me that these teachings would be brought to these retreats in any different way except one. And that is, when I sat as a person of color in mainstream retreats, often, most of the time, as the only person of color in mainstream retreats, the language that was used was not of my cultural experience. So I know I do, and I know that Larry does, make a real effort to not default in the stories that we tell and the poems that we read and the quotes that we make. We make a real effort to be mindful that all of those illustrative ways of speaking speak to the cultural experience of a broad audience of people. So that in a talk, I'll quote from T.S. Eliot to Moms Mabley, or from Maya Angelou to Mary Oliver. And in that way, there's a feeling that the teachings are relevant and can be illustrated through all of our lives. And certainly, teaching suffering to an oppressed community is not a big stretch. So I think the short answer to your question is there's nothing that really needs to be adjusted in terms of the teachings. What needs to be adjusted is the form in which they're brought.
I don't know actually if this is so much different than traditional mainstream retreats, but something that I've learned in teaching retreats, whether it's to the mainstream, but I particularly learned it in the people of color retreats, is that I can no longer teach just from my own personal experience, which is kind of the wisdom in which the pedagogy of teaching has been offered to me, is that your own personal experience is from where you can speak most directly. And that is true. And yet, in order to be able to reach people who are different than me, I actually have to do a slightly different practice of exchanging self for other, of putting myself in their shoes, putting my community in their shoes, and invoking that Satipatthana practice of internal and external in order to reach people who have different life experiences, and to make the bridge and the connection between the universality of my life story to the universality of their life story. And so I really feel very strongly what Gina said about that the teachings themselves are that universal peace that we're offering, but the form in which it's offered is particular to whoever is coming into the practice. And I really feel that the Buddha referenced this very strongly. He has a passage in the Vinaya in which two monastics come to him and say that there are so many different kinds of practitioners now from various clans and various races, and they spoil the language of the Buddha. And so the proposal that they had was to render the teachings of the Buddha into classical meter. And the Buddha replied, "This will not rouse faith in the faithless, nor increase faith in the faithful. Rather, it will keep the faithless without faith and harm some of the faithful. The word of the Buddha is not to be rendered into classical meter. Whoever does so commits an offense of wrongdoing. I allow the words of the Buddha to be learnt in one's own language." And my experience of that passage is that it's not just language. Because in the Buddha's time, if we reflect historically, language defined culture. Because it was a pre-written society, it was all about oral tradition. If you moved into a different geographic region that had a different language, you basically moved into a different culture. So what the Buddha was actually offering us is, how is the Dharma offered in to different cultures? And to do it within those cultural forms.
I can't think of a better place to end this interview. I want to thank you both for taking the time to talk with me today. And I know that our listeners will benefit from hearing your words. Thank you.
Thank you.